and welcome to our podcast, Manage Your Money God's Way, presented by Compass Catholic Ministries. Our goal is to help you remove all the debt that you've accumulated. We do this using biblical principles, and we teach these principles as part of our small group Bible study called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. To learn more, simply go to compasscatholic.org. My name is Steve Holbrook, and joining me are the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministries, John and Evelyn Bean. And if you're planning on buying your very first home and fulfill one of America's dream, there's lots of things to consider. And today, we're going to provide you five tips for the first-time home buyers. And that first one, John, what can you afford?
Absolutely. You know, many banks require that your mortgage and the homeowner's insurance and the taxes, the total of those numbers be less than 28% of your income. That means that if you're earning $50,000 a year, the total monthly cost for the mortgage, the insurance, and the taxes can't exceed $1,166, which is 28% of $50,000 divided by 12, and that's what it comes out on a monthly basis, which means that in actuality, the mortgage payment is going to be somewhere probably under $900. The principal payment is going to be under $900 because you add in the taxes. That's going to be $100 or $150 or $200 depending on where you live, and then you've got the homeowner's insurance, which could be another $100 or $150. So
you're just talking about the mortgage payment, including principal and interest, not just the principal.
Yeah, the total mortgage. Yeah.
Well, the other thing the banks look at is your debts, right? I mean, they want to keep your total debt load, including your mortgage, under a certain percentage.
That number, and it's gotten a lot more conservative since all the problems that we had in 2008 with real estate. Today, that number is probably going to be around 40%. Used to be you could get away with 50%, but I don't think anymore you can. You might get 41 or 42%, but that's, you know, the lower the number is, the better off you're going to be. Let's face it.
So that's debts like your car payments, any credit card debt you have, personal loans,
yes,
things like that, in
absolutely
addition to your mortgage.
It doesn't count things that come every month.
Like electric bill or like water
electric
bill or
something. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so
it doesn't
count that. So what does that bring your percentages to on how much you can be in debt?
Well, if you're making $50,000 a year, 41% is roughly $1,700 a month.
So that's your mortgage loan and your
all your debts. All your debts. So again, that's you want to keep that debt payment as low as possible. And once you buy a house and then you get everything that goes along with it, you know, your debt's going to start creeping up.
And there's a lot of other costs associated with the house other than just the mortgage payment and the principal, interest, and taxes.
You're going to have to make a down payment of some kind. And the best down payment that you can make is at least 20%. Because if you don't make it as much as 20%, say you only put down 5% or 10% or 15%, then you're going to have to pay a what they call PMI, which is private mortgage insurance, and that's equal to 1% of the loan amount. So if you're, just say, if the loan amount was $150,000, then 1%, that mortgage insurance is going to cost you $150.
So how long will you pay the PMI?
Until your equity increases to be above 20%.
Okay.
But that's not an automatic thing. You need to keep an eye on that, right? I mean, the bank just doesn't magically say, oh, guess what? You've reached 20%. You're good.
Well, in theory, they're supposed to.
But in reality.
In reality, keep track of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about shopping different mortgage lenders? Is that a good idea? Or does that mean a lot of hits to your credit report that look bad?
If you've got, you're going to get several hits to your credit report, you know, with every mortgage lender you go visit. But typically, the reporting agencies will lump all those together because it's very obvious what's going on. You're trying to buy a house. And so they'll lump it all together as one
big inquiry.
Yeah. And so, but yeah, you do take a little bit of a hit, but it's not like you're, you know, if you go see six mortgage people, you're not going to get hit six individual times and have it drop every time.
Now, what is it a good idea to shop around for a mortgage, or do you just follow whatever your parents tell you or whatever your realtor recommends?
The thing is, it's really makes it comfortable if you go to a mortgage lender where you know somebody there. That makes it comfortable. You've got people around that are, quote unquote, supporting you and helping you. But here's the ugly facts about mortgages, and that is very soon after that mortgage is completed and you've got your mortgage, whoever created the loan is going to sell it. And they're going to sell it to this massive company that's what they do, is they buy mortgage loans. And so even though you knew somebody at the mortgage company, within 6 months or a year, that all vanishes. So my recommendation is, in spite of the fact maybe you won't know the person that you're dealing with as a friend, quote unquote, find the one that's going to give you the best rate, okay? Because that mortgage is going to be for 30 years. Hopefully you'll prepay it, but and it won't take 30 years, but you know, it's going to last a long time. And even 0.25% over 30 years on $150,000, $200,000, $250,000 is a lot of money. And that friendship isn't worth that much, I guarantee you.
Now, do you have any thoughts or experience on the online banks that, like a lending tree, where you submit your information and they'll send you 5, 6, 7, 8 different lending institutions with information?
We did that once or twice. You know, when we've done that, I didn't rely 100% on that. I was just, well, let's see what's out there and see what. And a lot of those situations, you got to look at just not the interest rate, but what the points are and you know, all those different, the charges that they're going to, and they have to make a good faith estimate.
We'll get into that in a minute,
I think. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute. But yeah, it's a good way to get started, and it gives you an idea. And sometimes you might find a really low rate with good terms, and that's a good thing. Other times, if you go on and you know, Google mortgage rates, you're going to get a gazillion different hits, and you can just kind of start searching through them and pick the ones that you want to talk to.
Now, we've done both things. We've done an adjustable rate mortgage, and we've done a fixed rate mortgage. And both of those worked out well for us, but adjustable rate mortgages can be very iffy, right?
Yes, they can. An adjustable rate mortgage is iffy because it's an adjustable rate mortgage.
So if it goes up, you will pay more.
And actually, when we did that, our thought process was that we would get, it was a 7-year fixed rate. And then at the end of 7 years, it would balloon and we would either pay it off or reapply for a new mortgage. Or allow it to adjust. Three options. Just turned out that mortgage we obtained in 2004, and by 2008 or 9, when the mortgage came due, the rates were falling through the floor, and so we just let it ride, and we actually, over several years, every year the mortgage went down rather than going up. But that was a special case, and it's not happening now, I guarantee you that.
Well, and with a fixed rate, you know exactly how much you're going to have to pay for the life of the mortgage.
Yes.
So that gives you a lot more security because you know it's not going to go up by X amount percent.
Yes, that's true.
Now, if you have an adjustable, you can at any time during that 7 years refinance to a fixed rate?
In mortgages today, it used to be, you know, 30 years ago and way beyond that, there was a prepayment penalty on mortgages. And if you tried to pay it off or you paid more than what you were supposed to, they would penalize you. I don't know that there are any mortgage companies that still do that. I would obviously ask the question just to make sure as I'm, you know, interviewing mortgage companies, but I'm pretty sure that most of them don't do that anymore.
Now, what about pre-qualification? Did we usually get pre-qualified for a mortgage, or we just kind of...
Yes. Yes, yeah. You just go to more, you know, you know you're going to buy a house, so you go find your mortgage company, and you know, the big thing that they're going to tell you, well, the mortgage isn't, your rate isn't set in concrete until, you know, we actually start the mortgage process, you give us some money, and, you know, and a lot of them will say it doesn't really go into concrete until the day you close, because mortgages fluctuate on a daily basis.
So what's the advantage of getting pre-qualified?
Well, you know how much you're going to spend. You know, what you're qualified for. So, you know, if you're only qualified for $150,000, unless you're going to put $50,000 down, no sense looking at a $200,000 house. Okay.
Which is what the, I know sometimes when we watch shows about more, you know, HGTV and, you know, the budget is 150. So we're going to show you something that's 220. It's just a little bit above your budget. And the poor people are sitting there like deer in the headlights going, a little bit, that's $70,000 above my budget. So, yeah. So that's a good way to like wrap a boundary around how much you're going to spend. And if you can only qualify for that much plus your down payment, you've got a limit to how much house you can look at.
And you have to stick to that limit.
And you got to stick to it, right? Because, I mean, where's the money going to come from? If they're not going to qualify you for more and you don't have more to make up the difference,
it's not going to fall out of the sky.
One thing that you can do that we haven't talked about yet, but if you go to the CompassCatholic.org website and go to the calculators, there is a mortgage calculator there, and it'll show you what your payment will be, and you know, you pick the value of the house, and you pick the interest rate. So if you've been talking to a mortgage company, you'll have an idea. Plug all that information in, and it'll tell you what your monthly payment is going to be and all that kind of stuff. It gives you a good sense. Now, it's not going to be 100% accurate because it's not the mortgage company.
And it's not going to include taxes and insurance, right?
No, those things
are... Because it'll just be a mortgage calculation.
Yes.
Good idea.
Again, to find the mortgage calculators that John was referring to a few minutes ago, go to CompassCatholic.org. In the navigation bar, click on Resources, and you're going to find 5 calculators specific for mortgages, and one that I recommend to so many people considering buying a home, whether it's their first or their fourth. It's called Mortgage Qualifier. It will tell you just how much home you can afford once you plug in your numbers. This is Manage Your Money God's Way, hosted by the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministries, John and Evelyn Bean. And today we're sharing 5 tips for the first-time home buyer. Evelyn, our 4th tip is, what kind of house do you need? And there's a lot to consider. How big is the family? What neighborhood are you willing to consider? Are the schools a factor? Home? Condo?
Yeah, it's stuff like, how convenient is the house to the school or the grocery store or local family or the church? You know, in a perfect world, you would find the ideal house, the ideal size, the ideal price, and the ideal location. But life ain't perfect, right?
Yeah, I've not found that.
So realistically, you're going to have to compromise on location or size or the number of bedrooms or how good a shape the house is in or something. I mean, as many houses as we bought, and we've even built one ourselves.
Is this where people get into trouble, where there's a certain neighborhood they want to live in, but they can't afford it?
Oh, yeah.
But they'll talk themselves into it.
Well, or it's easy to talk yourselves into, this house is near my mom and dad, and they'll help us babysit or whatever, but the house isn't the right size, or it's not the right configuration. So it's always good to have a very specific idea of needs versus wants.
And it goes back to what you said before the break. You have a budget, stick with it. You know what you're going to spend for the house. You really have to be focused and stay to that number.
Well, and the other thing is, what can you change and what are you stuck with? I mean, usually the floor plan is something you're stuck with. You're not going to knock down walls in most cases. But when people say, oh, I hate this paint color, it's purple. Well, guess what? You know,
a can of paint, cheap fix.
A can of paint is not that expensive, and painting is not that hard. So the paint color is like the least of your problems.
So, but you just have to have that visual.
Yeah,
like
you have to understand what's changeable and what's not. The light fixtures, okay, brass light fixtures aren't in anymore, but those are easy to change out. But you have to have that budget in mind when you start thinking about what those changes are, because you can't usually go in and redo the whole house, including new furniture and new windows and new roof and new appliances and new kitchen and all that.
You're not going in and flipping the house. Most people aren't.
Yeah, you want to live in it for a while.
You want to be in it. And so you've got to consider all the costs. And, you know, we've talked about the down payment and a mortgage. When you go into the house, there's things that are going to cost you money outside of those cosmetic things that you can change. And we got caught dead the very first house we bought, because we had it all planned out. We knew exactly how much money we had, and we got to the closing, and they said, oh, well, you need to give us $1,500.
This was in the days before the mortgage company had to give you the closing estimate ahead of time. Oh. This was way back in the dark ages when we were still driving horses to the closing of the house we bought. Yeah, we were like, what? $1,500?
So we bought the house, but we totally cleaned out both our checking and our savings to come up with that extra $1,500 that we hadn't planned on.
So you're eating ramen noodles for the next couple of months?
It wasn't pleasant. But, you know, there are things that are going to happen as part of buying a house. And one of the things you should always do, whether it's mandatory or not, most of the time the mortgage company is going to ask you to do it, but you want to get a home inspection. You got to check and see that it's wired correctly and the water plumbing is all done correctly and, you know, all those good things. There isn't a bunch of rotten wood and
termites.
Termites.
You know, the thing that pops into my mind here is when your sister bought that house in California and the home inspector was the friend of the realtor. And the home inspector said there was nothing wrong with the house. Well, she got into it and there were significant mold and water issues in the house.
That's sad.
She trusted the realtor and her recommendation. So you need to be careful and you need to really understand the quality of your home inspector when you get it done. And, you know, we've even had home inspections done on new houses.
Yes, we have. And they found stuff that needed to be fixed. Another thing that you're going to be charged for is an appraisal fee. That's usually $200 to $500, $600 because the mortgage company wants to have an appraisal. It is the price that they're asking the right price? Another thing that you're going to run into is escrow accounts. Now, we've talked about escrow accounts for your personal savings and stuff like that. This is a place where the escrow account is typically being managed by the mortgage company. You know, they're going to put the insurance and the property taxes into an escrow account. And depending on what time of the year you close on the house and when the taxes are due, you're probably going to have to pay almost a year's worth of, especially taxes, right up front. Because you won't have, if you're just paying 1/12th at a time, you won't have enough to fill in to when the taxes are going to be due.
So we were talking earlier about closing costs. And what does that amount to, John? About what is the percentage on closing costs that you should anticipate?
Well, it varies. But, you know, I think 3 to 5% is probably a pretty good number. I would go to the higher number just to make sure you got enough money since we did it once and we didn't.
So this is stuff like loan origination fees, attorney fees, the doc stamps, I think they call them.
Yes.
Documents.
Yeah. That's not a big number, but.
But it all adds up.
Yeah. Title insurance.
Credit report. And the 2010 reforms require lenders to provide you with a good faith estimate of the closing costs on your home before closing. So you don't run into what we ran into when we didn't have enough money to cover the closing costs.
And the good thing about getting that upfront estimate is that it can't be, you know, your costs can't exceed that by more than 10%. So you know that it's going to be within 10%. That's a pretty good deal. So, you know, if you're going to buy a house for $150,000 and you're going to make a 20% down payment and you got 4% closing costs, you're going to have a total of about $36,000 that you got to bring with you in a form of a check when you go to close on the property.
And that's a big number.
That's a big number for a lot of people.
And the problem is you're not done then, right?
Well, no, that's true. You know, you've got the moving expenses. How are you going to get your furniture from your other house or your apartment into the new house? And that depends on where you're moving from and how many friends you've got with big, strong backs to help.
And how much beer and sandwiches you're willing to provide to those friends, right?
Yeah.
How old your friends are.
And then you get into the house. And, you know, one of the very first things you're going to find, and you haven't thought about it until the very first night that you're spending in that house. Oh, we don't have any curtains. What are we going to do now? And that's why you see people with newspaper glued to their windows and sheets hung over. You know, there's this, you know, the feeling of exposure.
Well, I remember one house we moved into. I think it was when we moved from the apartment to the condo when we were in Indiana. And all we could find for breakfast that morning was a mixing bowl and a spoon that you would like mix cake batter with. It was a huge, and that's when John was eating cereal in the morning. He looked like a little kid sitting on the floor eating his cereal. But that was all we could find because we hadn't thought about how to pack so that it was understandable what we had when we actually moved in. That was bad.
Another thing you're probably going to have, or is a possibility to have, I won't say probably, but is a possibility, is homeowner association fees. And utilities. Think about this. If you're moving to a brand new area and you don't have any association with any of the utilities, the power company, the water company, that type of thing, you're probably going to have to pay a deposit to get your water turned on, to get your electricity turned on. And, you know, that can be a couple hundred dollars for each one of those.
And these are the questions you ask as you're looking for a house.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the HOA. Yeah.
You know, who is the power company for this house? That kind of thing. Just the first cost and understanding that typically isn't enough. And then, you know, last but not least, you got a budget for the continued upkeep and maintenance of the home. And a good average cost is $1 per square foot of the house size, or 1% of the purchase price per year.
So if it was a $100,000 house, you'd need $1,000 a year to set aside for maintenance just in case.
Right.
And that's different than the emergency fund.
That's not your emergency fund. No, right. We're not. That's something totally different.
Because this is just ongoing maintenance.
Yeah, housing maintenance. Housing maintenance.
So that's going to vary based on the age of the home and the condition of the house, too. I mean, if you have old appliances or, you know, the roof is 15 years old when you move in and you're in Florida, that roof's going to need to be replaced a lot sooner than if it was up north someplace.
And hopefully a home inspection will tell you as the potential buyer that the roof is old.
Yep.
So you either negotiate for a new roof or they knock the price of the house down.
Well, and if they don't, you should be asking, how old is the roof?
Yep.
How old is the refrigerator? How old is the range? How old is the microwave?
The air conditioning.
How old is the air conditioner or the furnace, you know, if you're buying someplace up north? Because you have to start calculating, okay, if these things are already 10 or 12 years old, the lifespan is really short. You're going to have to replace a bunch quickly.
And they all die at the same time when they die, don't they?
So the fact that you're researching and educating yourself about home buying is a really great first step towards being ready to buy your house. And, you know, the home is considered the domestic church. So your home should be a place of peace and comfort and joy. And you can ensure that by being really careful when your finances, when you're trying to buy a house.
And there they are, the 5 tips for the first-time home buyer. Now, if you'd like to share this program with someone that you know that may be considering buying that very first home, send them to compasscatholic.org and tell them when they get to the homepage, just scroll down on the podcast button, click it on, and look for 5 tips for first-time home buyers. And before we get out of here today, let's get to a couple of questions we received this week. Okay, John and Evelyn, here's question number 1. I have promised to help someone in our church financially for a certain period of time as they get back on their feet financially. However, I have since learned that they're handling their money very unwisely. In truth, I really don't want to continue giving any until they change their habits, but I've already verbally committed. What should I do?
You know, I think it's a blessing that you've been able to help these people financially. Probably where you missed the boat was if you had conditions on giving them the money, that should have been discussed well before this point. So if you had expectations, that should be decided when you actually gave them the money in the first place.
Since you didn't do that, I think that in this case, you should continue, but only if you have a discussion with the people and talk to them about managing their money wisely. And I'd ask them to go through the Compass Navigating Your Finances small group study and to learn and understand God's way of handling money, and then work with them in a one-on-one kind of situation to learn to be good money managers.
Okay, John and Evelyn, here comes question number 2. I received a call from a debt collector about a debt from 9 years ago. It was a fee from an electric company that I did not pay because I did not feel I should have been charged that fee. The collector threatened to report it to the credit agencies, but isn't that an empty threat after 7 years?
Collection accounts can only be reported
for 7 years and 6 months, 7.5 years, from the date you first fell behind to the original creditor. However, if a creditor or collector sues you afterwards and gets a judgment against you, then that can be reported separately, and a new reporting period starts all over again.
Doesn't a debt collector have to prove to you with documentation what you owe? I mean, just because somebody calls you doesn't mean much.
They have to provide some documentation.
So there should be some kind of documentation Yes. The person should get.
And here's one final question. John and Evelyn, my wife and I are not on the same page as far as giving. She does not want to donate any money to the church. How should I handle this?
I think you need to pray before you talk to your wife, but I'm going to let Evelyn really answer this from a wife's perspective.
Well, it's important to talk about it unemotionally, so you need to set aside a time and a place and a day where you can have an unemotional conversation and ask her if she's comfortable giving on a regular basis. And it's really important for you both to agree, because peace in your marriage is much more important than giving a specific amount. And see if she'll read Your Money Counts with you, and maybe you read a chapter at a time and discuss it. Maybe that'll bring you to the same place.
John and Evelyn, thank you so much. Now, if you have a financial challenge and you would like some advice from John and Evelyn, simply email your questions to askask@compasscatholic.org. That's ask@compasscatholic.org. For John and Evelyn Bean, I want to thank you so much for listening. And remember, each Wednesday morning, bright and early, we have a brand new podcast available. Go to compasscatholic.org. On the homepage, just scroll down, click on the button that says podcast, and look for this one, 5 Tips for a First-Time Home Buyer. This is Manage Your Money God's Way. We're from Compass Catholic Ministries.